this point, I want to invite Lucas forward. Lucas is going to share our faith story. If you haven't met Lucas, he's our choir director and manages our 8:30 service. And if you don't recognize him, it's because he shaved his beard and got a haircut. So I seriously did not know who he was for a minute on Sunday. So looks.
Good evening. When Pastor Mike asked me if I wanted to share my faith story, I thought about it for a while. I was definitely happy to share about my faith journey, but I had to ask him, "Are you sure? It's kind of boring." To be candid, I think I was about as close as you can get to winning the circumstance lottery. I was born into a loving, caring Christian family to two committed parents who themselves both had two loving, caring Christian committed parents who were, you guessed it, loving, caring, committed grandparents to me, involved in my life. I was blessed with encouragement and resources to help me become a great student. I was blessed with height and ability to play the sports that I loved. We were always financially secure. And possibly lucky, or the luckiest of all, out of the 10,000 plus cities worldwide, I happen to be born in San Diego, California. But I know we all know that there's more to living in a city than the temperature always starting with a 7. through it all, they made sure, my support system, they made sure that faith was always present, was always a part of our lives. We prayed before every meal, prayed before going to bed. We were heavily involved in our church. I hit all the church checkpoints. You know, I'm baptized as a baby, confirmed in 8th grade. I was a part of the youth group all the way through high school, and then I even went on to a Christian university for my bachelor's, where I got my music degree, but I also got my minor in biblical studies. And I was involved in the worship music there for our weekly chapel services. So you can maybe see where I was kind of hesitant to share. There's no real hardship, no come-to-Jesus moment, not even really any prodigal son moment. I was mostly pretty well-behaved. Kind of just a mundane, steady journey through it, but still he encouraged me to do it, and I'm really glad he did, and I'm really grateful for this opportunity because it gave me a chance to reflect on a part of myself that I haven't really dug into in a really long time. And in that reflection, I landed on two pivotal moments that really really shaped my faith, really kind of formed the prism through which I experience life, the way I see things and do things and experience God. And they both happened at a time when I was transitioning out of living the faith that was sort of bestowed on me, you know, by my parents through habits and my upbringing, and transitioning into a faith that was really mine, that I was taking ownership over. And these both happened my sophomore year of college. And as I mentioned, you know, I was starting to figure out how to apply my faith as a real adult in real life, which is different than the hypothetical conversations you work up when you're in high school and in middle school. And so the first one I want to share about was in my Luke Acts class, taught by Dr. Matthew Hauge. It was a tremendous course. It kicked off my deep interest in analytical, historical, cultural study of the Bible, treating it, you know, as a historical text, getting into it. And at some point during the semester, as we were doing our usual dissecting of, you know, the historical context of some passage we were looking into, somebody had asked our professor, Dr. Hauge, do you believe all the things Jesus did in the Bible, or do you believe that they happened? And at some point in his response, he said, "I have to have faith because I'm too smart. If I didn't have faith, I wouldn't believe any of this." And first off, my instinct anytime someone says they're too smart for anything is to loudly scoff. But when you're a leading researcher and contributor in your field, I feel like it's a fair assessment. It was that comment in particular was kind of just a passing comment. And it wasn't the larger point he was trying to make in the discussion, certainly not of the lecture he was teaching that day. But it really stuck with me. It didn't flatten me or give me some aha moment in that moment, but it kind of just was an earworm. I just couldn't get it out of my head. It was like a refrain constantly playing in my mind. I found myself chewing on it over the coming weeks and months. My initial interpretation of it was that he was more or less saying that he needed his faith, otherwise he was simply too smart to believe in something as nebulous and abstract as, you know, God and Jesus and salvation. And in fact, it felt like he was kind of acknowledging that it's kind of crazy, really, to believe in all that. And while I do think that was part of it, after some time, I think what he was, the nuance of it, the really what he was trying to convey, or at least what landed with me, was that I can't think my way into faith. Even then, I was discovering how much I preferred to operate in the realm of objectivity and facts, and nothing's changed there. And for me at that time, faith felt like something that, while I knew I had it, I knew it was part of my life, I was still on this quest to justify it and prove it at all times. And as a result, there were a lot of questions and doubt that I had to kind of stow away, stash away until I could wait until I could find the concrete evidence to prove it, to make it worthwhile to confront those. So hearing his words were really freeing after a while, after I kind of figured out what he was trying to say. It was this great release as I realized that my faith isn't dependent on my logic. It's not tethered to it. My faith should maybe transcend it. It should run over it, around it, through it, be there as it's happening. And so faith was no longer a debate I needed to win, either with myself or with others. As a result, it allowed me to confront the questions that I had hid from myself. It allowed me to dig into the many, many paradoxes and contradictions of being a Christian in the modern world. And in doing so, it helped me to better and more fully embrace the human that I am, the human that God made me into. The second moment I want to share about, that was really pivotal, happened not too long after that, actually, as we were kicking off our first practices for our men's volleyball season. My coach gathered us together, and he challenged us throughout the season, and he gave us reminders to be worshipful with how we played. Now, that was a hard one to wrap my head around at the time. First of all, at that time, worship was for music. Second of all, I've softened a lot over the years, but at the time, I was a really, really competitive person. I didn't just need to win. I needed you to lose so bad that you never wanted to play again. And that felt like a really hard thing to spin into worship. But what I quickly learned is that he wasn't asking us to dampen our competitive drive or take it easy on our opponents or anything like that. He was just asking us to acknowledge, he was challenging us to acknowledge that every play and every game, every practice, everything, every drill was a blessing, was a gift from God. It was an opportunity to take advantage of the gifts and the opportunities that he's given us, and to make the most of them. And it wasn't about changing the way that we played. It was about centering on who we were playing for. My game took a big leap that year, and I really attribute it to that change in mindset. It really opened things up for me. And even better, it started to bleed into all the other areas of my life. And eventually, I started embodying that every part of life is an opportunity to worship. I can worship when I make music, of course, but I can also worship when I check in on my family and friends, or when I make dinner, or when I put Arlo to bed. I can even worship as I send my third reminder email to an engineer that if he doesn't get me the proper voltage figures for these certain wires, this repair manual is not going to get released on time. Even then, I can worship. And it seems really obvious in retrospect, but so often, I think we just need someone to point to that thing that's right in front of our faces that we've been looking for. And I'm really grateful to my coach for doing that. There have been a lot of other important moments over the years that have grown my faith, deepened my perspective. But the wisdom of those two, Dr. Haughey and Coach Jimmy, feel paramount to who I am today. The kind of the first real building block of my adult faith. Despite the dearth of any real excitement in my faith story, I grew to be very excited to pass their wisdom along to you as well, and I hope it enriches your faith as much as it did mine. Thank you for listening.